I have a good friend who has the reputation of putting his foot in his mouth. We'll call this friend Chuck for the sake of anonymity. But this is an old friend that I know from my hometown. And there's story after story after story of this friend Chuck saying things that he wishes he could take back. I remember being in a choir class with Chuck when we were about 16 years old, and he did it again this time. The teacher of this class, we'll call her Miss Madeline, she was a petite and very kind, gentle woman, and most of the people liked her. She knew how to direct the choir very well. The only thing that people found off-putting about Miss Madeline is that she had a problem with having really sweaty armpits. And so she would direct the choir, and she was a kind lady, but she just had these huge, you know, sweat marks under her armpits. And I remember my friend Chuck, and he got to know her pretty well. He had a pretty good relationship with her. He ended up going on and doing a career in music professionally. So he would work often with her after class and got to know her pretty well. And she was kind and worked with him and took the time to teach him music and to develop his vocal performance. And they had a pretty good relationship. But there was one day when she left the class for a few minutes to go and do some things. And my friend Chuck, being the class clown that he was sitting at the door with the door to his back and started telling jokes and telling stories. And he had the whole class laughing. And the laughter from the class started to feed him and build his confidence more and more and kind of started to push him to the point where he started to go a little bit too far. And Chuck, before he knew it, was all of a sudden making fun of Miss Madeline's big, sweaty armpit marks right as she walked in the door. And he had his back, you know, the door was behind him, and she walked in as the whole class is laughing, and there's just those few seconds of him realizing by the looks of the students in the class and the silence from the laughter that she was standing right behind him. And he remembers turning around and looking and just that moment of making eye contact with Miss Madeline, this woman who was kind to him, who had taken all these hours after school to meet with him, and to just see this horrible, embarrassed look in her face. And just that moment of eye contact. And I remember that night being with him and him just saying, "Oh, Tony, what have I done? Why can I not just keep my mouth shut sometimes? Why did I do this?" And just that heartbreaking moment of looking into her eyes. He saw in her eyes the pain of one who had been publicly betrayed. And he wanted to take his words back. His relationship with Miss Madeline was now badly damaged, and he could see it in her eyes. In Luke's account of Peter's denial of Jesus, he notes that just after his third time declaring to those around a charcoal fire, "I do not know him," Peter's eyes catch Jesus's from across the yard. Can you imagine what shame Peter must have felt in that moment, looking into the eyes of the one he had just flat out abandoned after years of traveling together, sleeping side by side, sharing meals together. Peter, the closest of Jesus' inner circle. And it says that Peter ran off and wept. And the adjective in the text is bitterly. He ran off and Peter wept bitterly. Oh, if only there was a way to take back those words. He had deserted his master, the one he swore he would follow even unto death. And as soon as the pressure was on, Peter, three times, standing just across the courtyard from Jesus, said, "No, I do not know him. I have nothing to do with him." So then we fast forward 1 week. Jesus had been killed. He has risen from the dead. And he has even made two appearances already as the resurrected Lord before the assembly of terrified disciples hiding in the locked room. Yet, where is Peter to be found this week after all of the events of Easter? And this, I think, is the perfect time to read the text that I forgot to read right after the prayer for illumination. So it's on the back of your sheet. It's John 21, verses 1 through 19. This happens about a week after Peter's threefold betrayal of Jesus. John 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus shows himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, or otherwise known as the Sea of Galilee. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We'll go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now, none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew that it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." Second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he had said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belts and to go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." This is the word of the Lord. So it's the week following all these Easter events. Jesus had already appeared twice to the disciples in the locked room. And yet, where do we find Peter in this significant moment when the resurrected Lord had defeated death and is now walking around on earth again? Peter has gone back to his day job. He goes back to doing exactly what he did before Jesus had come to call him. He goes back to fishing. My preaching professor, Daryl Johnson, my professor at Regent College, says, and I'm paraphrasing him here, he says, "It's not that Peter didn't believe in the resurrection. He did believe that Jesus was everything that he ever said he was. And he did not doubt that Jesus had defeated death and that he would now continue his healing ministry as the resurrected Lord. Peter believed these things. But Peter's shame is what left him feeling, and this is Daryl's phrase, disqualified from discipleship. Disqualified from discipleship. Can you relate to that at all? Have you ever had a moment or a point, a season in your life where you have found yourself before God saying, Lord, you know that I believe these things. I know that you exist. I know that you are working in the world. I know that you are powerful, that you are good. I believe it all. But me, I can't believe that I am one who you can actually use for ministry in this world. Lord, I believe that you are powerful and good, but I can't believe that someone like me has any place in what you're doing in this world. This is how Peter felt. My friend Sarah is a wonderful poet, and she wrote this poem about Peter at this point in his life. And I'd just like to read a paragraph of that poem. She says, she's writing from the character of Peter. How can I explain the grip of shame? All I need to do is what I've always done. Shove out and hope for the best. Toss and toss all night, fight the current, chase the tide. I coiled the rope out of habit, worked silent beside the others until dawn. I cast a glance to the sea and saw instead my cowardice tied like a millstone around my neck, the boat rocking on the surface above as I sank to the depths. And so we see Peter here in shame, but the story, of course, doesn't end there. And we'll see as Peter moves from shame to forgiveness and to restoration. Because a stranger shows up on the shore that day. 1,000 yards away from the boat, he yells out, "Have you caught anything?" "No." "Try the starboard side." And minutes later, the disciples find that the boat is overflowing. The nets are overflowing with fish. And it was John, the beloved disciple, who first realized that this scene was all too familiar. And perhaps it's bringing back for you images of the first calling of the disciples in Luke chapter 5. And John exclaims to Peter, "It is the Lord!" And with an impulsive move that is so typical of Peter, he grabs his cloak, throws it on, for he was naked, it says, and he jumps into the water. He puts on the cloak because in that culture, in that day, that's what you wore when you greeted someone of a high stature. You dressed appropriately. And just impulsively, he throws on his cloak and dives out of the boat and just starts swimming those 1,000 yards to the shore, leaving the others to have to row in by themselves. But then, as Peter gets to the shore, what does he find? Verse 9 says, When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire. Charcoal fire. If you've studied John, and if you know John well, you know that John is a master of words. And throughout his gospel, you will not find a place where John wastes words. So why this detail? Why does John make this point of showing that this was a charcoal fire? Well, we know that if you can look back chapters before and you see the story of Peter denying Jesus, all three times John points out that it happened beside a charcoal fire. Can you imagine the shame that Peter must have associated with charcoal fires? Can you imagine that those memories, and like Luke's gospel says, looking across the fire and across the courtyard and catching that glimpse of Jesus' pain-filled eyes after he had just denied him three times. And so Peter swims these 1,000 yards and he walks up the shore, and the text says, there is Jesus sitting at a charcoal fire. And you can imagine just the shame just swarming in on him. To be sitting there and to look across the fire again and to see those same eyes. Jesus is bringing Peter to deal with his shameful past. There were three denials, and now, across the charcoal fire, Jesus has three questions for Peter. Simon, son of John. And note, he doesn't even call him Peter. He's not calling him by the new name, Peter, the rock. This is not the ideal Peter that he's dealing with. This is old Simon, son of John. He says, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And Peter's response is, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And again, and Jesus responds, feed my lambs. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Tend my sheep. And a third time, this third time that says brings pain to Peter, that Jesus would ask him a third time. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. So feed my sheep, Jesus says. Most of you probably are aware of one reading of this part of the text where if you look at it in the Greek, there's this wordplay going on with two different words for the word love, agapeo and philios. And some commentators read a lot into that. The first two times Jesus is asking, do you agape me? Do you agape me? And then some read it as a third time he sort of settles for this, do you philios me? So do you love me and with a sacrificial love? He's not satisfied. Do you love me with a sacrificial love? Not satisfied. And then a third time asks, okay, do you love me with this brotherly friendship kind of love? But most commentators throughout the history of the church and most today deny that those sort of nuances are working out here. That's a reading of this part of the scripture that's kind of become popularized and sounds kind of fancy, but most say that this is kind of a synonymous reading, and the reason it's happening three times is to match the three denials of Peter. So Jesus is bringing all the shameful past and bringing Peter to confront it across this charcoal fire in all the same kind of situations and setting as his original calling. And he's restoring Peter by giving him these opportunities to three times declare his love for Jesus. It says that he was hurt the third time that Jesus asked him, probably as it brought back all this pain. And some people might say, why would Jesus do that? Why is Jesus kind of sticking him with this knife? And the preacher Tim Keller says, yes, Jesus is twisting the knife in Peter, but this is the knife of a surgeon. Jesus is bringing Peter's past all back to the surface to forgive him, to heal him, to restore him. Three denials, three vows of love, which are the very opposite of denying someone. And in forgiving Peter, Peter is restored to his place in leadership in the church. Feed my lambs, Jesus says. Tend my sheep. Feed my lambs. And again, there's debates about the nuances and how much we should read into the words changing a bit there, but most say, again, the theme, however you read it, is Peter, go now and care for the church. Peter is not disqualified from ministry. Peter has been restored. I had the pleasure a couple days ago of sitting in on Dale Bruner's seminar at the worship symposium, and he happened to be spending a good 4 hours taking us through the book of John, and it was fun to sit and to prepare for this, hearing him go through that and dealing. He spent a good half hour kind of walking us through this passage. And Bruner has this great quote when looking at this passage. He says, the only question that Jesus has for a person's ordination is, do you love me? That's it. He doesn't need our timesheets of how many hours we put in. He doesn't want a list of our accomplishments, of how many degrees we've completed in school. Jesus' question to us is simple. Do you love me? And it doesn't matter how far away we have walked from him, how or in what ways we have denied him, betrayed him, embarrassed him. Jesus always invites us back, always seeks after us, and brings us to that place, meeting us there, extending forgiveness and grace, and asking, do you love me? And if so, then yes, you are restored to ministry. I'll end with the end of my friend Sarah's poem. Again, in the character of Peter. When I reached the shore, you bent to stroke that charcoal fire, and I watched my betrayal grow bright again. I saw my courage once more go up in smoke. Oh, for the ash upon my face and tongue. Oh, to tear my cloak in two and recount for you each glaring fault and failure. I am no rock, no fisher of men. I am Satan, as you said. I failed you once, I will fail you again. And yet you met me with that quiet gaze, stretched out fish and bread across the flame, held it out, insistent, took my hand, and spoke my name.